Hello and welcome to the Sabbatarianism podcast. I am the technical genius that is named Justin. After twice now having some technical difficulties, we're going to begin the Sabbatarianism podcast today. Richard has already read about half a hard chapter and has had to start over, so I apologize. Say hello to the people, Richard.
Hello, people.
And Neil is here also.
I am here also.
He is here also. Hello, Neil.
Hello.
All right. So if you are new to the podcast, please start in the beginning. Big concepts covered in the beginning, and we can't repeat them each time. And if you have not first read the Bible for yourself, please start there and read the Bible for yourself. You can do it. All right. We're in Genesis 36 for now a third time. Richard's microphone is now working correctly. My microphone is now working correctly. And we're able to record. How about that? Richard, some really difficult names here, but you are going to read them because.
Because. Okay. That's a pretty good reason. Chapter 36 of Genesis.
Because why?
Because.
I know you've already said it twice.
These are the sons of Esau. And we'll run into these names and the tribal names that come from them all through the scriptures as we go. And I think it's important that we know who we're talking about and who these people were.
And also, notice in while we read this chapter, how many times it says that Esau is Edom.
Yeah.
It stresses that point a lot.
And it's already said that several times before this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interchangeable, those names. Chapter 36. Now this is the genealogy of Esau, who is Edom. Esau took his wives from the daughters of Canaan, Ada, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, Aholabama, the daughter of Anah, the daughter of Zibeon the Hivite, and Basemath, Ishmael's daughter, son of Nebosheth, sister of Nebosheth. Now Ada bore Eliphaz to Esau, and Basemath bore Reuel. And Aholabama bore Jeush, Jaalan, and Korah. These were the sons of Esau who were born to him in the land of Canaan.
And Eliphaz is a name found in the book of Job.
But yes.
Don't know if that's actually this Eliphaz, correct?
Well, we don't know for certain any of this about Job, but the names, Job was from the land of Uz, and you'll see that here. The territory of Uz was inside Edom.
Okay,
we'll note that as we go through here. Then Esau took his wives, his sons, his daughters, and all the persons of his household, his cattle, and all his animals, and all his goods which he had gained in the land of Canaan, and went to a country away from the presence of his brother Jacob. For their possessions were too great for them to dwell together, and the land where they were strangers could not support them because of their livestock. So Esau dwelt in Mount Seir. Esau is Edom, once again. And this is the genealogy of Esau, the father of the Edomites in Mount Seir. Now that's south of where Judah was. These were the names of Esau's sons: Eliphaz, the son of Ada, the wife of Esau, and Reuel, the daughter of Basemath, the wife of Esau. And the sons of Eliphaz were Teman. Now that's where the Temanites originated. And in the book of Job, Eliphaz is called a Temanite.
Is he?
Yes, so there is an association there. Omar, Zepho, Gatam, and Kenaz. Now Timnah was the concubine of Eliphaz, Esau's son, and she bore Amalek to Eliphaz. These were the sons of Ada, Esau's wife. Now Amalek is the father of the Amalekites.
The people that Israel was supposed to destroy.
Yes, and didn't.
Did not.
All right. These were the sons of Reuel, Nahath, Zerah, Shammah, and Mizzah. These were the sons of Basemath, Esau's wife.
What's the chances that Reuel is Jethro?
Well, could be.
It's a possibility.
You know, he was, you know, over in the land of...
Of Midian. Yeah. And that was even farther south of Edom. So
yeah,
it's a possibility.
Yeah. These were the sons of Aholibamah, Esau's wife, the daughter of Anah, the daughter of Zibeon, and the daughter of Esau, Jeush, Jaalam, and Korah. Verse 15. These were the chiefs of the sons of Esau, the sons of Eliphaz, the firstborn son of Esau, were Chief Teman, Chief Omar, Chief Zepho, Chief Kenaz, Chief Korah, Chief Gatam, and Chief Amalek. These were the chiefs of Eliphaz in the land of Edom. These were the sons of Ada. These were the sons of Reuel, Esau's son, Chief Nahath, Chief Zerah, Chief Shammah, and Chief Mizah. These were the chiefs of Reuel in the land of Edom. These were the sons of Basemath, Esau's wife. And these were the sons of Aholibamah, Esau's wife, Chief Jeush, Chief Jaalam, and Chief Korah. These were the chiefs who descended from the Aholibamah, Esau's wife, the daughter of Anah. These were the sons of Esau, who is Edom. These were their chiefs. These were the sons of Seir the Horite, who inhabited the land of Lotan, Shobal, Zibeon, Anah, Dishan, Ezer, and Dishan. These were the chiefs of the Horites, the sons of Seir, in the land of Edom. Of course, these were Canaanite people. And the sons of Lotan were Horai and Heman. Lotan's sister was Timnah. These were the sons of Shobal, Alvan, Manahath, Ebal, Shepho, and Onam. These were the sons of Zibeon, both Aja and Anah. This was the Anah who found the water in the wilderness as he pastured the donkeys of his father Zibeon. These were the children of Anah, Dishan and Aholibamah, the daughter of Anah. These were the sons of Dishan, Hemdan, Eshbon, Ithran, and Sheran. These were the daughters of Ezer, Bilhah, Zeavan, and Achan. These were the sons of Dishan, Uz, and Aran. These were the chiefs of the Horites, Chief Lotan, Chief Shobal, Chief Zibeon, Chief Anah, Chief Dishan, Chief Ezer, and Chief Dishan. These were the chiefs of the Horites, according to their chiefs in the land of Seir. Now these were the kings who reigned in the land of Edom before any king reigned over the children of Israel. Bela, the son of Beor, reigned in Edom. Now, that man is notable ancestor of Balaam, who Israel will encounter later on.
The man with that hits the horse, that has the talking horse, is that who it is?
The donkey, yeah.
The donkey.
And the name of his city was Dinhaba. And when Bela died, Jobab, the son of Zerah of Bozrah, reigned in his place. Now, this Jobab means Father Job. That's what the word means. And the land of Uz, where he lived, is part of a territory in Edom, named after Uz, that we read about back in verse 28. So, you know, there's a clue, or there's a possibility. Bozrah reigned in his place. Then Jobab died. Husham of the land of the Temanites reigned in his place. Of course, Eliphaz the Temanite in the book of Job is, once again, he's a son of Esau. And when Husham died, Hadad, the son of Bedad, who attacked Midian in the field of Moab, reigned in his place, and the name of his city was Avith. When Hadad died, Samla of Masrekah reigned in his place, and when Samla died, Saul of Rehoboth in the river reigned in his place. When Saul died, Baal-Hanan, the son of Achbor, reigned in his place. And when Baal-Hanan, the son of Achbor, died, Hadar reigned in his place. And the name of his city was Pau. His wife's name was Mehetabel, the daughter of Matred, the daughter of Mezahab. And these were the names of the sons of Esau, according to their families and their places, by their names: Chief Timnah, Chief Avah, Chief Jetheth, Chief Aholibama, Chief Elah, Chief Paanan, Chief Kenaz, Chief Teman, Chief Mizbar, Chief Magdal, and Chief Iram. These were the sons of Edom according to their dwelling places in the land of their possession. Esau was the father of the Edomites. Now, these names and their tribes will show up throughout the New Old Testament. So I think it's very good that you use this as a reference for the origin, and especially to realize that these are all Edomite people.
Well, it would have been a lot shorter chapter if Esau didn't have so many wives.
Yeah.
Well, so what you're saying is a lot of these people descended and became the inhabitants of Canaan?
Well, they were there. I think historically, if people have dug into all the research, they mixed in with all the Canaanite tribes around, and they were of their own people. Agag, who would read that Saul would refuse to kill later on, was a son of Edom. The Agagites, what's his name? Haman, in the book of Esther, is of that lineage. The Temanites, the Amalekites, all these people that Israel would encounter, and most of all, were hostile to Israel, were Edom's children, Esau's children.
Yeah. But I find it interesting that at least there is a possibility, we of course don't know for sure, but there is a possibility that one of the stories, one of the great stories in the Bible, would be about a son of Esau, or a descendant of Esau, if indeed Job was.
Well, and when Job's mentioned there, he's one of the kings of Edom.
Yeah.
Not necessarily one of Esau's descendants.
Oh.
When you read through those, not all of those were descendants of Esau.
Well, the sons of Seir were not.
They were a different people, right?
Yeah. Mm,
okay.
They were.
Well, that's good to know.
Basically, those people, the sons of Seir, there, starting in what, verse 20, were people that were in that land when Esau moved into it.
Yeah. But starting in verse 31, we go back to the kings of Esau. And Bela, son of Beor, was an Edomite. And, you know, that we get to Jobab. Jobab then is listed as one of the kings of Edom. So he was an Edomite. This Jobab was, if he was indeed Job.
But if he was from Uz.
He was from that land, but it says his descendants. Verse 33, and when Bela died, Jobab, the son of Zerah of Bozrah, reigned in his place.
But is that... Okay.
This is the kings of Edom.
Yeah. Okay. But however, Bela, the son of Beor, Jobab was the son of this Zerah of Bozrah. So this wasn't a lineage of, as most king lines are. The son took over.
I was just going about what the...
You following what I'm saying, though?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so Jobab dies, and then this Temanite, Husham, takes over, and so on. So in other words, these kings were not necessarily a lineage or a genealogy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Chapter 37.
Now Jacob dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. This is the history of Jacob. Jacob, being 17 years old, was
feeding... Joseph.
Oh, Joseph. Oh. That's right.
It says the story of Jacob, but we're going to read almost all about Joseph from here on out. Yep.
Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father. Now there, you see, there was something, we're not told what it was, but...
They were doing something where Joseph could bring a bad report about them.
And it was to their detriment.
And this was the two concubines' sons.
Yes, mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age. Also he made him a tunic of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. Now Joseph had a dream, and he told it to his brothers, and they hated him even more. So he said to them, "Please hear this dream which I have dreamed. There we were binding sheaves in the field. Then behold, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And indeed your sheaves stood all around and bowed down to my sheaf." And his brother said to him, "Shall you indeed reign over us, or shall you indeed have dominion over us?" So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words.
Capricious youth.
Yes.
Probably should have kept that to himself.
Yeah. Then he dreamed still another dream and told it to his brothers and said, "Look, I've dreamed another dream. And this time the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowed down to me." So he told it to his father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, "What is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come to bow down to the earth before you?" And his brothers envied him, but his father kept the matter in his mind.
Now, Neil, you've pointed out many times. Go ahead.
Well, these two dreams are two different, represent two different events.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it says that Jacob, or his father, kept the matter in mind. Okay, his mother was dead.
Yeah.
So this would have to require a resurrection in order for
her to bow down also.
To bow down to him.
Yeah.
Now, the last dream.
Right, the last dream. And in that dream, you have the sun and the moon representing the father and the mother. And 11 stars. In the first dream, you just have 11 sheaves. And his rises up, and the others bow down to him. That's just him and his brothers.
Yeah.
Which will be fulfilled in his lifetime.
Yeah.
The other one is still yet future.
And it's mentioned in the 12th chapter of Revelation.
Yes.
The 12th chapter of Revelation.
Yes, in the history of the church, in the history of Israel.
It talks about the star and the sun and the moon and the sun and the moon and 12 stars in that chapter.
Okay.
Verse 12?
Yep.
Then his brothers went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, "Are not your brothers feeding the flock in Shechem? Come, I will send you to them." And he said to him, "Here I am." Then he said to him, "Please go and see if it is well with your brothers and well with the flocks, and bring back word to me." So he sent him out of the valley of Hebron, and he went to Shechem. Now a certain man found him, and there he was, wandering in the field. And the man asked him, saying, "What are you seeking?" So he said, "I'm seeking my brothers. Please tell me where they are feeding their flocks." And the man said, "They have departed from here, for I heard them say, 'Let's go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them in Dothan. Now when they saw him afar off, even before he came near them, they conspired against him to kill him. Then they said to one another, "Look, this dreamer is coming. Come therefore, let us now kill him and cast him into some pit, and we shall say, 'Some wild beast has devoured him.' We shall see what will become of his dreams." But Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, "Let us not kill him." And Reuben said to them, "Shed no blood, but cast him into this pit which is in the wilderness, and do not lay a hand on him, that he might deliver him out of their hands and bring him back to his father." So it came to pass, when Joseph had come to his brothers, that they stripped Joseph of his tunic, the tunic of many colors that was on him. Then they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it. And they sat down to eat a meal. Then they lifted their eyes and looked, and there was a company of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels, bearing spices, balm, and myrrh on their way to carry them down to Egypt. So Judah said to his brothers, "What profit is there if you kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh." And his brothers listened. Then Midianite traders passed by. So the brothers pulled Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. And they took Joseph to Egypt. Now notice, the Ishmaelites and Midianites were
right
over there in the same area together.
But it's almost like they're synonymous here.
Yeah, that word is more or less used synonymously. They too were children of Abraham.
Right.
Then Reuben returned to the pit, and indeed Joseph was not in the pit, and he tore his clothes. And he returned to his brothers and said, "The lad is no more, and I, where shall I go?" So they took Joseph's tunic, killed a goat of the kid of the goats, and dipped the tunic in the blood. Then they sent the tunic of many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, "We have found this. Do you know whether it is your son's tunic or not?" And he recognized it and said, "It is my son's tunic. A wild beast has devoured him. Without doubt, Joseph is torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his clothes, put sackcloth on his waist, and mourned for his son many days. And all his sons and all his daughters arose to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. And he said, "For I shall go down into the grave to my son in mourning." Thus his father wept for him. Now the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and captain of the guard.
So Richard and Neil, but this is kind of Richard's area of expertise, did all of the other sons here just disqualify themselves from the birthright and blessings because of what they just did from a legal point of view?
Well, certainly. I mean, but they'd already been doing that. You know, Reuben.
Sleeping, yeah, Reuben, and, right.
And then the two, Simeon and Levi. And Judah.
Levi, yeah.
Okay. See, yeah, Simeon and Levi. And now Judah is the traitor who actually sells his brother, more or less, to his death, or symbolically, which is a role that he will take later on, his children will, the children of Judah.
But there were others in between Judah and Joseph. Could this have disqualified them as well?
Well, these, of course, it disqualified them, but there'd already been a bad report of them that when Joseph brought that word back to his father. They were all disobedient. It was Joseph who loved, who had the same love and spirit as his father did.
Well, and another thing that you, I think you're missing a little bit, is the firstborn of each wife would have qualified in basically an order of their birth before any of the others. So Joseph would have been at least fourth in line. And the other firstborn were disqualified rapidly.
Is that right?
Yeah. So Joseph,
I am missing that. Yeah. I didn't know if there were different mothers that created a different lineage.
We're told in Obadiah, when it talks about all this being undone and the sin of Edom being put back on their head, when the birthright or the rights of, I don't need to misquote it, but it's talking about Abraham, Jacob, and Joseph. Finally get there. I guess we could turn to the book of Obadiah since I brought that up. It's one chapter, so it's hard for me to find it.
Yeah, it is. It's a little easier on a computer here.
Yeah.
Is it towards the end of it, Richard?
Yeah.
So in verse 19, the south shall possess the mountains of Esau, and the lowland shall possess Philistia. They shall possess the fields of Ephraim and the fields of Samaria. Benjamin shall possess Gilead. Is that what you're talking about?
There's a place in there that talks about the inheritance of Abraham, Joseph. And it's not Abraham, Isaac, or Jacob. It's Joseph is listed there.
So in Obadiah 18, the house of Jacob shall be a fire, and the house of Joseph a flame, but the house of Esau shall be stubble. They shall kindle them and devour them, and no survivor shall remain of the house of Esau.
For sure. I still hadn't found Obadiah.
Right after Amos.
Amos.
Right after Amos.
Oh, I thought Andy was after Amos.
Okay. Andy's before, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's it. The house of Joseph. It's talking about the house of Jacob, the house of Joseph being restored.
Well, and from the love standpoint that we've talked about, Joseph should have qualified.
For sure.
You know,
for sure.
Right.
But I was just wondering from a legal perspective about the disqualifications of the others in between Judah and Joseph, because there was another firstborn in between Judah and Joseph. I believe there's two, right? The two firstborns of the concubines.
Well, if they disqualified themselves, somebody else inherited it. But another reason to inherit it was because God had decreed it, just like he did before Edom and Esau and Jacob were ever born. One will serve the younger. That's the way it turned out. And Joseph was the beloved of his father. He had the same heart. And
the son of the loved wife.
We will see how that heritage is passed to Joseph when we get to chapter 48 here, and to his sons. And another thing to bear in mind is that Joseph should have been the firstborn in the first place.
Right.
That was a breach that was made and something that was stripped
by
from
Laban when he switched the girls.
That's right, when he switched the girls. That took away the inheritance of all of Rachel's children. And we will read, if we go through the paper on the, I wrote on the prophecy of the barren wife, you know, the Bible talks about that breach being undone, and the children of Rachel finally having her inheritance when Christ comes into his kingdom. So Joseph was supposed to be the firstborn to begin with, and that you'll see in chapter 48 of Genesis, when we get there in 10 more chapters, that is prophesied to be undone. What was done there will eventually be undone.
Okay. Well, anything else from you guys? Are we ready to move on?
I think we can move on.
Okay.
Now, before we read chapter 38, I just want to point out that last verse, that Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and captain of the guard.
So there was something else.
Well, not really.
Okay, go
ahead. That'll come up in two chapters, not this next one. So
in Egypt, when they're in Egypt.
Yeah. All right. Chapter 38. You're going to continue reading?
Are you sure we're ready, Neil?
You tell me.
I'm just teasing you. All right, Richard.
And it came to pass at that time that Judah departed from his brothers and visited a certain Adullamite whose name was Hira. And Judah saw there a daughter of the certain Canaanite whose name was Shua. And he married her and went into her. So she conceived and bore a son, and he called his name Ur. She conceived again and bore a son, and she called his name Onan. And she conceived yet again and bore a son, and called his name Selah. He was at Chezib when she bore him. Then Judah took a wife for Ur, his firstborn, and her name was Tamar. But Ur, Judah's firstborn, was wicked in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord killed him. And Judah said to Onan, go into your brother's wife and marry her, and raise up an heir to your brother. But Onan knew that the heir would not be his, and it came to pass, when he went into his brother's wife, that he omitted on the ground, lest he should give an heir to his brother. And the thing which he did displeased the Lord, and therefore he killed him also. Then Judah said to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, remain a widow in your father's house till my son Selah is grown. For he said, lest he also die like his brothers. And Tamar went and dwelt in her father's house. In the process of time, the daughter of Shua, Judah's wife, died. And Judah was comforted and went up to his sheep shears at Timnah, he and his friend Hira the Adullamite. And it was told Tamar, saying, look, your father-in-law is going up to Timnah to shear his sheep. So she took off her widow's garments, covered herself with a veil, and wrapped herself, and sat in an open place which was on the way to Timnah, for she saw that Selah was grown, and she was not given to him as a wife. When Judah saw her, he thought she was a harlot, because she had covered her face.
Can we pause for a sec?
Yes.
I just wanted to point out, I've thought about this in the past, but it really hit me this time as you were reading, is this is covering a vast amount of time.
Yeah.
He is having children, and they are grown up.
Several years.
Yeah.
This is decades here of time that's being covered here.
Well, you figure she realizes or knows that he's old, talking about Selah. Tamar is watching him grow up, sees he's old enough to be his, you know, he could be her husband. And Judah hasn't given him to her. So he's, you know, maybe 15, 18, maybe 20. So you're looking at a 20-year period.
And what is an Adullamite?
I would have to go back and look up the lineage there in concordance. It's probably the Canaanites.
And Timnah, wasn't that one of the names we read in?
That was Esau.
Esau, mm-hmm. Yeah. And it appears that this was a tradition where they went. It says they were going to shear their sheep, but for sexual exploits, we'll say.
Yeah, it was obvious that's what he was going for.
Yeah.
Verse 16?
Yep.
Then he turned to her by the way and said, "Please let me come in to you." For he did not know that she was his daughter-in-law. So she said, "What will you give me that you may come in to me?" And he said, "I will send a young goat from the flock." So he said, "Will you give me a pledge till you send it?" Then he said, "What pledge shall I give you?" So she said, "Your signet and cord and your staff that's in your hand." Then he gave them to her and went into her, and she conceived by him. So she arose and went away and laid aside her veil and put on the garments of her widowhood. And Judah sent the young goat by the hand of his friend, the Adullamite, to receive his pledge from the woman's hand. But he did not find her. Then he asked the men of that place, saying, "Where is the harlot who was openly by the roadside?" And they said, "There's no harlot in this place." So he returned to Judah and said, "I cannot find her." Also the men of the place said, "There was no harlot in this place." Then Judah said, "Let her take them for herself, lest we be shamed, for I sent this young goat, and you have not found her." And it came to pass about 3 months later that Judah was told, saying, "Tamar, your daughter-in-law, has played the harlot. Furthermore, she is with child by harlotry." So Judah said, "Bring her out and let her be burned." When she was brought out, she went to her father-in-law, saying, "By the man to whom these belong, I am with child." And she said, "Please determine who these are, the signet and the cord and the staff." So Judah acknowledged them and said, "She has been more righteous than I, because I did not give her to Shelah, my son." And he never knew her again. And it came to pass at the time for giving birth, that behold, twins were in her womb. And so it was, when she was giving birth, that the one put out his hand, and the midwife took a scarlet thread and bound it on his hand, saying, "This one came out first." Then it happened, as he drew back his hand, that his brother came out unexpectedly. And she said, "How did you break through? This breach be upon you." Therefore his name was called Perez. And afterward his brother came out who had the scarlet thread on his hand, and his name was called Zerah. And that, for whatever reason, establishes two main lineages of the Jews, or the Jewish people.
And it shows for the first time a little bit of repentance in Judah.
Yes.
Where he says, "She is more righteous than I."
And we'll see that theme develop throughout the scriptures.
Yeah.
So it's down through Perez that David and ultimately the Messiah comes, correct?
I would have to look at that. I can't give you an answer right off the top of my head.
Okay.
One or the other.
Well, it's pretty obvious that's the reason for this story, is to establish those two lines.
Yes, the lineage of Judah, yes.
All right. We ready for 39. Chapter 39?
Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, brought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer of his house and all that he had put under his authority. So it was from the time that he had made him overseer of his house and all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake, and the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. Thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. But Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There's no one greater in his house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" So it was, as she spoke to Joseph that day, that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was inside, that she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. And so it was, when she saw what he had, that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside, that she called to the men of her house and spoke to them, saying, "See, he has brought in to us a Hebrew to mock us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And it happened, when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me and fled and went outside." So she kept his garment with her until her master came home. Then she spoke to him with words like these, saying, "The Hebrew servant whom you brought to us came in to me to mock me. So it happened, as I lifted my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me and fled outside." So it was, when his master heard the words which his wife spoke to him, saying, "Your servant did this to me after this manner," that his anger was aroused. Then Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined. And he was there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy, and he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever they did there, it was his doing. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's authority, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made to prosper.
So the blessings of the Lord are on Joseph, just as they were on Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Everything he touches does well.
Yes.
Kind of a wild story here about this guy's wife.
Well, it says that he was angry, talking about Potiphar.
Yes.
And it very well could be, normally, if a man was accused or proven to be guilty of a sexual crime, we'll say, he had been put to death. Now, I think Potiphar knew his wife was a
promiscuous.
Liar, promiscuous and a liar.
May have. I don't know.
Well, then when I mentioned that he was the captain of the guard, he probably had some influence over this keeper of the prison. And so he says, "Here, take this guy, put him to use. He's excellent. He'll make all
Everything
that you do
does
prosper.
Turns to gold."
Yeah, we'll make a movie here.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, that's why I look at these movies and I think, you know, I didn't read that in the Bible.
Well, I went to while you were reading, I went to Matthew 1, just because it comes down the line of David there, and it in verse 3, Judah begot Perez and Zerah by Tamar. Perez begot Hezron, and Hezron begot Ram. Ram begot Abinadab. So it follows Perez down.
Yes.
So that's,
Perez.
I think, where I got that is.
Yeah. That's good.
I actually remembered one.
Came to pass after these things that the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief butler and the chief baker. So he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the prison, the place where Joseph was confined. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them, so they were in custody for a while. Then the butler and the baker of the kings of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, had a dream, both of them, each man's dream in one night, and each one man's dreams with his own interpretation. And Joseph came in to them in the morning and looked at them and saw that they were sad. So he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in the custody of his lord's house, saying, "Why do you look so sad today?" And they said to him, "We have each had a dream, and there is no interpreter of it." So Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell them to me, please." Then the chief butler told his dream to Joseph and said to him, "Behold, in my dream a vine was before me, and in the vine were three branches. It was as though it budded. Its blossoms shot forth, and its clusters brought forth ripe grapes. Then Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand." And Joseph said to him, "This is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Now within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your place, and you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand according to the former manner when you were his butler. But remember me when it is well with you, and please show kindness to me. Make mention of me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this house. For indeed I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews, and also I have done nothing here that they should put me in the dungeon." When the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, he said to Joseph, "I also was in my dream, and there were three white baskets on my head. In the uppermost basket were all kinds of baked goods for Pharaoh, and the birds ate them out of the basket on my head." So Joseph answered and said, "This is the interpretation of it. The three baskets are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your head from you and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat your flesh from it." Now it came to pass on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast for all his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief butler and of the chief baker among his servants. Then he restored the chief butler to his butlership again, and replaced the cup in Pharaoh's hand, and he hanged the chief baker, as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him.
For now.
For now.
You'd have thought when he saw the baker get hung, he'd have remembered.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know how these butlers and bakers are.
Well, there was no candlestick maker, though.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, we all have dreams all the time. And I personally have had a dream that told me what was going on in something, in a situation in my life. And I didn't pay any attention to it, and I didn't know how to interpret it at the time. But after the course of time, I looked back on that dream, and it was explaining to me exactly what was happening. Well, and I just didn't know how to interpret it and react to it because I didn't have God's Spirit at the time. And probably still don't know how to do that quite like Joseph and Daniel, but it's just interesting.
You know, we are told somewhere, I think it may have been, that God speaks to us in dreams.
It's in Joel, and Peter repeats it in Acts 2, doesn't he?
Yeah, it does not always mean that all dreams are coming from God. But
it is one method he uses.
Yeah.
And you know, I very seldom remember a dream. I wake up and know I had one.
Yeah.
But I won't remember it.
Yeah, me too. I'll remember for like the first 5 minutes I'm up, and then it's gone.
Yeah.
But this particular dream really stood out to me, and I remembered it. I can still remember it.
Well, I had one dream that a long time ago that literally happened within minutes after it woke me. And it was almost a nightmare. And it involved an automobile and a car wreck.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd arrive down the road asleep and dreaming.
I had one of those too once, but no, I was actually in my bed, but I woke up out standing on the porch, and then here comes a car. We had lived right along the railroad tracks. It kind of went up and over the railroad tracks, and it went airborne, went into the ditch, hit a culvert, exploded. 3 people died.
Wow.
One of them was a friend of mine.
Terrible.
You know, it's like, I don't know. I had that dream just before it happened. Mm-hmm. And then one time I had a dream while I was driving.
And I've been there.
All of a sudden, there's a train, and I hit my brake, and I come screeching to a stop, and I didn't know I was sleeping until I hit the brake.
Oh, wow.
And there's no railroad track. There's no train, but
it just something to wake you up.
I think it saved my life, probably.
Yeah. Well, obviously, this chapter's in here kind of setting up what comes next. For Joseph to interpret Pharaoh's dream and things go from there. Anything else, gentlemen?
I think that'll do for now.
All right.
Good place to stop.
Yeah. Thank you guys for coming in. We thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.